Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. Democratic National Convention in Chicago. This is Democracy Now!, War, Peace, and the Presidency. We're breaking with convention.
On behalf of everyone whose story could only be written in the greatest nation on earth, I accept your nomination to be President of the United States of America.
Before a thunderous crowd of 20,000, Vice President Kamala Harris formally accepted the Democratic Party's presidential nomination. If she wins, she'll become the first woman, the first black woman, and the first person of South Asian descent to be elected U.S. president. We'll get response and look at how Shirley Chisholm and Fannie Lou Hamer helped pave the way for this historic moment. Harris accepted the nomination after a four-day convention where her campaign refused to allow a Palestinian American to take the stage despite repeated demands by uncommitted delegates.
Here is the scandal, my friends. Here is the scandal. The scandal is that there are forces within Democratic Party leadership who do not want us to talk about Palestinian human rights. But that's not sustainable. This is a watershed moment.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. We are breaking with convention. I'm Amy Goodman. Vice President Kamala Harris formally accepted the Democratic presidential nomination Thursday night here in Chicago. Harris is the first black woman and person of South Asian descent to be nominated for president by a major party. Before a thunderous crowd of 20,000, Harris, who was California's top prosecutor before becoming a senator, then vice president, laid out her case against Donald Trump.
Just imagine Donald Trump with no guardrails and how he would use the immense powers of the presidency of the United States. Not to improve your life, not to strengthen our national security, but to serve the only client he has ever had, himself.
During her speech, Kamala Harris reiterated her support for Israel while also calling for its U.S.-backed war on Gaza to end.
President Biden and I are working to end this war such that Israel is secure, the hostages are released, the suffering in Gaza ends, and the Palestinian people can realize their right to dignity, security, freedom, and self-determination.
Protests continued Thursday with thousands of people taking to Chicago's streets for the march on the DNC. Protesters rallied into the night as Kamala Harris accepted the Democratic presidential nomination on the convention stage. Demonstrators had planned to march toward the convention site, but were blocked by hundreds of police and riot gear who forced the march to disperse. Democracy Now! Was there, asking protesters what their message was for Vice President Harris.
I am asking her to look into her humanity and to look at photos like this and recognize that this is what happens every day, hundreds of times a day, for decades, and in particular the last 10 months.
The protester held up a photo on her cell phone of a Palestinian child with burn wounds on their face. Meanwhile, delegates from the uncommitted movement locked arms and walked inside the DNC halls wearing Palestinian keffiyehs one day after the DNC refused to allow a Palestinian-American speaker to take the main stage. Uncommitted delegates circled the halls of the United Center arm in arm until eventually they were able to take their seats on the convention floor in their delegations after they were initially denied. The powerful United Auto Workers Union is the latest group to condemn the exclusion of Palestinian American voices from the DNC, saying in a statement, quote, if we want the war in Gaza to end, we can't put our heads in the sand or ignore the voices of the Palestinian Americans and the Democratic Party. In Gaza, the UN says it'll begin vaccinating children against polio by the end of the month amidst fears of a massive outbreak. This comes as Israeli attacks continue to kill besieged Gazans as soldiers ramp up operations in Deir al-Balah in central Gaza and Khan Yunis in the south. Israeli negotiators have returned from more ceasefire talks in Cairo as Israel continues to rebuff Hamas's demand for Israel's complete withdrawal from Gaza. On Thursday, U.S. Ambassador to the United Nations, Linda Thomas-Greenfield, told the U.N. Security Council a ceasefire and hostage deal is, quote, now in sight. Riyad Mansour, Palestine's U.N. envoy, also addressed the Security Council Thursday.
Stop the bleeding in Gaza. Impose an immediate ceasefire. Stop the suffering. Protect our children and all our civilians as international law and our collective humanity demand. End this genocide. End it now.
Israel has killed over 40,200 Palestinians in Gaza since October 7th and injured over 93,000, though those official tallies are certainly far lower than the true toll. In the occupied West Bank, Israeli forces killed three Palestinians during an attack Thursday on the Tul Karm refugee camp, where the Israeli military has been conducting near daily raids. The repeated Israeli assaults have been described as collective punishment intended to terrorize and dispossess the local population. This is a homeowner in Tul Karm whose house was destroyed during the raid.
We are like other people. They say there is a raid and a military operation, so we flee the house because they usually attack this neighborhood. We went to my brother's house. While at my brother's home, we saw on social media that our house was blown up.
In other news from the occupied West Bank, the Norwegian Refugee Council is calling on the international community to take meaningful action after noting Israeli settler violence has triggered the largest forcible transfer since October 7th. The NRC said the ongoing attacks are, quote, occurring in broad daylight under the watching eyes and the protective force of the Israeli military and highlight the unlawfulness of Israel's presence in the West Bank as recently ruled by the International Court of Justice, unquote. The World Food Program says a small convoy of humanitarian aid trucks has entered Sudan, offering a slight respite to thousands of displaced people facing famine in western Darfur's Karenik region. The UN convoy comes after the Sudanese military agreed to reopen portions of Sudan's border with Chad. The Sudanese army had previously allowed only a trickle of aid into Sudan, claiming the rival rapid support forces were using the routes for smuggling weapons. Back in the United States, voters in Arkansas will not be weighing in on a ballot measure that would enshrine abortion rights in the state's constitution. After Arkansas's Supreme Court rejected a grassroots ballot initiative over a technicality on how signatures were registered. Abortions are currently banned in Arkansas with limited exceptions for severe medical emergencies. The group that gathered the signatures, Arkansans for Limited Government, vowed to keep fighting, saying, quote, this effort has generated a wave of fiercely engaged Arkansas women. We're outraged, we will not back down, and we will remember this in November, they said. The U.S. Supreme Court sided with Arizona Republicans Thursday as it ordered the partial and temporary reinstatement of an Arizona law requiring proof of U.S. citizenship to register to vote. The law was first enacted in 2022, triggering legal challenges by the Biden administration and voting rights groups. But the Supreme Court blocked Arizona from putting into effect another part of that law, which could have prohibited tens of thousands of voters who are already registered from participating in the presidential election without proving their U.S. citizenship. And the National Labor Relations Board ruled Thursday Amazon must recognize and bargain with its unionized delivery workers in Palmdale, California, rejecting Amazon's claims that it is not their main employer since the workers are subcontracted through another company. Delivery workers with the Teamsters Union celebrated the ruling.
Amazon cannot dodge any responsibility for these low wages anymore. For the safety. Like, it's so dangerous to work for this company. They can't hide that anymore. It's a lot easier for us now. Why? Because now you have to bargain with us. You have to recognize your drivers as union members if they want to organize. Why? Because it's time. It's the worker power that we came up with that we're fighting and using to obviously get what we need. If you are an Amazon driver, an Amazon worker that's been sitting on the fence, reach out to us. Send us a DM, fill out a form, because it is that time.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, War, Peace, and the Presidency. We are breaking with convention. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. We're broadcasting from the studios of CAN TV here in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world. Vice President Kamala Harris formally accepted the Democratic presidential nomination Thursday night here in Chicago. Harris is the first black woman and person of South Asian descent to be nominated for the president by a major party. Her nomination came just over a month after President Biden dropped out of the race. Before a thunderous crowd at the United Center, Harris laid out her case against Donald Trump.
Fellow Americans, this election is not only the most important of our lives, it is one of the most important in the life of our nation. In many ways, Donald Trump is an unserious man. But the consequences of putting Donald Trump back in the White House are extremely serious. Consider not only the chaos and calamity when he was in office, but also the gravity of what has happened since he lost the last election. Donald Trump tried to throw away your votes. When he failed, he sent an armed mob to the United States Capitol, where they assaulted law enforcement officers. When politicians in his own party begged him to call off the mob and send help, he did the opposite. He fanned the flames. And now, for an entirely different set of crimes, he was found guilty of fraud by a jury of everyday Americans. And separately found liable for committing sexual abuse. And consider what he intends to do if we give him power again. Consider his explicit intent to set free violent extremists who assaulted those law enforcement officers at the Capitol. His explicit intent to jail journalists, political opponents, and anyone he sees as the enemy. his explicit intent to deploy our active duty military against our own citizens. Consider the power he will have, especially after the United States Supreme Court just ruled that he would be immune from criminal prosecution. Just imagine Donald Trump with no guardrails and how he would use the immense powers of the presidency of the United States. Not to improve your life, not to strengthen our national security, but to serve the only client he has ever had, himself. And we know what a second Trump term would look like. It's all laid out in Project 2025, written by his closest advisors, and its sum total is to pull our country back to the past. But America, we are not going back. We are not going back. We are not going back. Affordable Care Act, when insurance companies could deny people with pre-existing conditions. We are not going to let him eliminate the Department of Education that funds our public schools.
Kamala Harris speaking on Thursday night at the Democratic National Convention. We'll get response to her acceptance speech when we come back with Barbara Ransby, historian, author, and activist. Stay with us. Franklin featuring Blues Brothers. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org. War, peace, and the presidency. We are breaking with convention. We're here in Chicago for the last day of our five-day expanded two-hour broadcast from the Democratic National Convention. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
Well, we continue our coverage of Vice President Kamala Harris, who formally accepted the Democratic presidential nomination on Thursday night here in Chicago. If Harris wins in November, she will become the first black woman and person of South Asian descent to be nominated for president by a major party.
We are joined now by historian, author, and activist Barbara Ransby. She's a professor of Black Studies, Gender, and Women's Studies and History at the University of Illinois, Chicago. Ransby's latest book is Making All Black Lives Matter, Reimagining Freedom in the 21st Century. Welcome back to Democracy Now! It's great to have you with us, Professor Ransby. Well, it was a historic night in many ways. You have Vice President Harris accepting the presidential nomination before 20,000 people. Many of the women, though she wasn't, many of the women were dressed in white to honor the original suffragists. Can you talk about the significance of this moment and what Vice President Harris did and didn't say?
What she did and didn't say. Thanks for having me, Amy, and welcome to Chicago. I don't have to say welcome to Juan because he's here with us. But yeah, I mean, it's a historic moment in a lot of ways. Certainly, it breaks a barrier. I never thought I would see a black woman nominated. But, you know, I want to speak to the historic significance, but I also want to talk about the contradictions, right? Kamala Harris, unlike others who have, you know, fought for inclusion in the Democratic Party at the convention, you know, isn't coming out of the same kind of movement. She has ties to the civil rights movement through her mother, and she also participated in the anti-apartheid movement. But really, you know, I think a lot of what I appreciate about this generation of activists is the de-emphasis on representation and the emphasis on politics and the emphasis on where do you stand on issues. And if we think about a tradition of black women in politics, including in the Democratic Party, right, it has been pushing the conscience of the Democratic Party toward a radical inclusivity, toward some of the most oppressed sectors of our community and all communities. And so, yes, it is significant in terms of representation, but again, at a time when representation is limited. We have a multiracial right-wing movement, by the way. So representation is not the goal. And, you know, I just want to de-emphasize in some ways. I mean, of course, we can talk about, you know, a larger political lineage, which she is connected to. But I know, you know, I hope, I think we're going to talk about Fannie Lou Hamer and others. But I think of someone like Abbas Alawi as much more in the tradition of Fannie Lou Hamer than a Kamala Harris. So, yes, it breaks barriers. Yes, you know, it is a historic moment in a certain sense, but we have to also talk about the gravity of this moment and the politics that Kamala Harris brings with her. So that is my historian's view and my activist view.
And your response to the DNC's decision to not allow a Palestinian-American voice on the stage?
Disgraceful. Absolutely disgraceful. I mean, and it was such a small ask. You know, we're witnessing genocide in Gaza right now, and many of our hearts are breaking. Certainly our Palestinian friends and colleagues here who've lost dozens of family members, people you've had on your show who tell harrowing stories, the physicians who've gone there and seen the devastation of children, hospitals bombed, et cetera. So, you know, a minimum of decency would have been to allow for a Palestinian voice on that stage.
And I'm wondering, the whole week, for those of us who remember the old Democratic conventions, the first convention that I covered...
Yeah, you were raising trouble in 68, I hear.
Right, but the first one I actually covered inside was in 1984.
Okay.
And what has struck me about this convention and the last several is the level of mass, of choreography of mass spectacle.
Yes.
There are no, back in the 60s, 70s, and even the 80s, individual delegates could hold up their own signs. You know, the cameras would show a dissent in the audience. Now we're talking about a Democratic Party where every single banner is controlled and decided by the organizers of the convention, and everyone like sheep can help and hold the same signs at the appropriate times that they've been told to do it. And so you really have no dissent visible at all within a supposedly Democratic Party.
Interestingly, on the floor, it was the Minnesota delegation, and that's an interesting delegation. They had 10 uncommitted people who would not commit to Will President Biden at the time when voting in the primary. And they held up the names of Palestinians who had died in Gaza. And immediately, the other delegates in the Minnesota delegation, well prepared, held up USA signs that covered all of those signs.
Yeah, I missed that.
And then you had the unfurling of the banner earlier in the week. This was in the Florida delegation by a Florida delegate, a Connecticut delegate, and a delegate from Michigan that said, "Stop arming Israel." And they immediately put up signs, placards that said, "We love Joe." It was Monday night when Joe Biden was speaking. And
immediately some of the runners for that Florida delegation started handing out dozens of placards, and so they had more and more to cover the banner because that was particularly large.
Concealing and containing protest and this sort of cosmetic appearance of unity when there was dissent in that room, not just the uncommitted delegates, but others. But it has a carnivalesque feel to it. And the real conversations and the real passions and debates were happening outside.
Well, let's stay inside for a minute.
Okay.
Let's go to Kamala Harris addressing the issue of Israel-Palestine and Israel's war on Gaza.
With respect to the war in Gaza, President Biden and I are working around the clock because now is the time to get a hostage deal and a ceasefire deal done. And let me be clear, I will always stand up for Israel's right to defend itself, and I will always ensure Israel has the ability to defend itself, because the people of Israel must never again face the horror that a terrorist organization called Hamas caused on October 7, including unspeakable sexual violence and the massacre of young people at a music festival. At the same time, what has happened in Gaza over the past 10 months is devastating. So many innocent lives lost. Desperate, hungry people fleeing for safety over and over again. The scale of suffering is heartbreaking. President Biden and I are working to end this war such that Israel is secure, the hostages are released, the suffering in Gaza ends, and the Palestinian people can realize their right to dignity, security, freedom, and self-determination. To defend our forces and our interests against Iran and Iran-backed terrorists.
That's Vice President Kamala Harris in her acceptance speech for the Democratic nomination for president. Speaking here in Chicago at the United Center, Professor Ransby, your response.
Well, I was glad to hear her mention the suffering of the Palestinian people, but of course it didn't ring true. It rang a little bit hollow because the Biden administration could stop much of that suffering, you know, by not sending 2,000-pound bombs and $3 billion a year to the Israeli government. So, you know, it would have been backed up by action if it would have been backed up by allowing a Palestinian speaker to speak in their own terms. That part would have. Resonated. But of course, talking about Israel's right to defense disguises the fact that this is an offensive war, offensive on every level that word means something, right? And the United States is facilitating it. And the, you know, 40,000 Palestinian lives. I mean, you all, you know, absorb these numbers every day in your reports, but it was not enough. It was the wrong message. And, you know, a throwaway line about Palestinian suffering does not get it.
So let's go to what wouldn't have been a throwaway line.
Okay.
And this is what the uncommitted delegates attempted to get all week. You have Harris accepting the Democratic nomination Thursday night after a four-day convention where the Harris campaign refused to allow a Palestinian American to take the stage. There were private negotiations that were going on throughout the week. But at a news conference on Thursday, delegates with the uncommitted movement said the Democratic National Committee told them it was the Harris campaign that they denied their request to have a Palestinian American speak. After receiving the news on Wednesday, many of the delegates and their allies staged a sit-in and spent the night on the sidewalk just outside the United Center.
did in state Democratic primaries earlier this year to call for an end to the Biden administration's backing of Israel in its assault on Gaza and for an arms embargo. The Uncommitted National Movement called on Harris to come to Michigan, where the Uncommitted Movement was launched, to meet with them and discuss U.S. policy on Israel-Palestine by September 15th.
Among those who spoke at the press conference yesterday was Rua Rahman, a Palestinian American who is a Georgia state representative in the Georgia legislature. She was among a list of speakers offered by the Uncommitted Movement that the Harris campaign refused to allow on stage. In her remarks, she read out the speech that she would have given at the convention had the convention allowed a Palestinian American on stage. This is Rua Rahman.